Just give me another beer.
Hello and welcome into the Feels Like 45 podcast. I'm Cade Webb, and this week I am not joined by Dustin Ragusa. Dustin is abroad. That's one word, and it's a classic joke. Anytime he's gone, he's traveling, and I'll just make sure everybody knows I'm not calling him what it sounds like I'm calling him. But he is not here this week. We hope he's having safe travels and gallivanting around wherever it is that he is. We'll see him next week. I am excited to be joined, however, by friend of the pod and longtime, you know, sports knower, a former colleague at Cowboys Ride for Free, and fellow craft beer and Kansas City Royals lover, my friend Joel Pinfield. Joel, welcome to the podcast. It's probably overdue.
It feels like it's been overdue. I've been trying to put out feelers for a couple of years of like, hey, if you need somebody, I'll hop on. Finally, glad we got to do this. I haven't talked about Oklahoma State on a podcast or really anywhere not on Twitter in like at least 2.5 years. So I'm pretty excited to do this. And we got of course, we get some big news right before, you know, we find out we're going to record together. So I'm excited. I actually finally got to meet Dustin for the first time in. I've known him through Twitter for 7.5 years. I was at a Thunder game this past weekend with my wife, finally got to meet him. So I've met both of you guys finally. Like it's,
isn't it wild when that happens? Like, yeah. You feel like you know somebody and you kind of don't, and then you meet them in person and, no, it's pretty cool. I saw the picture and, I'm actually shocked that you guys have never crossed paths either in Stillwater or literally at one of my tailgates. So
no, somehow that has never happened. And I'm, you know, usually end up at your tailgates during football season. And I somehow have never seen him. It's wild.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so I got to tell you too, I literally called that this was going to happen. I'm going to read you a excerpt from mine and Dustin's text messages, which by the way, are absolutely fantastic. But we were talking about what we would do, what I would do for this week's podcast. Do you want to record solo, have a guest, whatever you want to do? And I said on March 4th, knowing our luck, they're going to fire Mike Boynton that Thursday. And I got
exactly
tell you,
what happened.
If my picks this weekend in Kansas City for conference championship weekend are that good, it's going to be a really good weekend for me because it felt like Oklahoma State didn't have a choice based on the way the season ended. It's a great way to get us started. It felt like Oklahoma State didn't have a choice the way the season ended. As you look at the way there was really no ebb and flow to the season, no highs and lows. I felt like, and Dustin and I are well on record about this, that during the BYU and Cincinnati kind of like mini spurt that they had, they beat Kansas State. I think they won 3 out of 4 at one point. It was like, okay, it felt like you started to see the light come on for some of the young guys. And then in hindsight, you look up and that's kind of the bottom half of the league that you won some home games against. And where I think they were left no choice ultimately to make this decision is that you lose your last 4 games and the last 3 by 15 or more points. And it really felt like the light had left the program. I just don't see a way that you recover from it. And ultimately, Oklahoma State didn't feel a way to recover from it either. And, you know, Joel, before we get too deep, where were you? What were you doing? What was your thought when you saw the news come across?
So, as I mentioned, I was down and I was at a Thunder game when I met Dustin. So we were down in Oklahoma City visiting my mother-in-law. My wife is a teacher. She's on spring break. So we came down for a couple of days and we were driving back yesterday from UConn. We stopped in Blackwell to get some food. We have a 3-month-old daughter, so got to get her fed. And first thing I do is I check my phone and our good buddy Philip texted, sent me the tweet that he was gone. And I was like, well, we kind of saw that coming. It's honestly, I'll be honest, man, it's felt inevitable since the first game. You lose to Abilene Christian to start the year. You just never felt right. like this was not going to end well. And it sucks because as everybody's talked about over the last 24 hours or so about how incredible of a human Mike Boynton is, and that doesn't take away, and that's not getting pushed to the side despite the results on the court, but it just, nothing felt like it was going their way. They did a ton of roster turnover and relied on a bunch of freshmen in a year where they had to win, and it just, they fell on their face. And when you're going to do that in the best conference, basketball conference in the country, you got to find a way to win games. And this is a results-oriented business. Once they lost that buzzer beater to OU, you could just tell things were going to spiral. And they did almost immediately after that. And they ended the year, the freshmen ran out of gas. It just, nothing was going right. This was an inevitable change.
Yeah, I would agree with you on a lot of that. For me, it was an initial like, wow, I can't believe they actually pulled the trigger. Then it was, you know, the fan reaction of, okay, you know, Oklahoma State is, you know, going to make a move here, make a strong move. They're going to go get somebody. And then I realized that Mike Boynton's not our coach anymore. And I'll say this, I've never seen a coach go out in the way that he did and be basically universally loved by the school's fan base that he's leaving behind. And I think that's a great way to kind of capture what Mike Boynton brought to Stillwater. I mean, you think about all the obstacles that he had to deal with between the NCAA, the sanctions, COVID. His tenure was, the cards were stacked against him. And ultimately, I think late, he didn't do himself a lot of favors in the way he built his own roster. I think some of the comments in the media probably didn't earn him a lot of favor. And ultimately, that's where I believe Oklahoma State just had to make a move, because otherwise you bring back a roster that was good enough to get bounced in on now what is Tuesday of the Big 12 tournament. You lose by 20. And ultimately, there's just, you know, even the young core that you once felt pretty good about, I think everything's kind of up in question. And, you know, what's the harm in making a move outside of the buyout? I struggled to see many cons based on what I saw on the floor. And so, you know, all the accolades and the compliments for Mike Boynton are deserved. He put out a great video on Twitter last night and Instagram, thanking the fans, thanking the administration. And ultimately, I'll just say, I'm sad. I'm sad that he's not Oklahoma State's coach. But ultimately, I'm excited for what Oklahoma State may be about to be able to do. And that's why we brought you on, Joel, was to talk through what in the world Oklahoma State might do. Before we get into that, we ought to remind you that this broadcast is brought to you by our friends at Charlie Hustle Clothing Company. Charlie Hustle is a vintage-inspired clothing company based out of Kansas City that specializes in collegiate and hometown apparel. Charlie Hustle wants you to be the best-dressed fan of the season, so be sure to check out their wide selection of officially licensed collegiate apparel today and show off your school spirit all season long. With over 30 schools to choose from, they've got you covered with all of your collegiate apparel needs, so shop today at www.charliehustle.com, and when you do, use our promo code 101215, which is good for 15% off all non-sale items. Charlie Hustle, vintage made fresh. Joel, I'll also tell you and our listeners, if you're in Kansas City this weekend, swing by their pop-up shop downtown as they're, you know, putting out some really cool stuff over the Big 12 championship tournament weekend. I certainly plan to when I'm in Kansas City this weekend, and you should as well. They're dropping these really cool quarter zips. I don't know if you saw the Oklahoma Ooh. State version, but I'll give our friends at the 1012 Network some shout outs, because if I was an Iowa State or a Kansas or a Kansas State fan, I would be all over the new quarter zips that Charlie Hustle just dropped. They're pretty sweet. If you have a secret admiration for any of those schools, you ought to check those out. But Joel, I just wanted to remind us and walk us through some of the stats of Mike Boynton's career. I think it's important that, you know, we kind of remind ourselves what we're talking about here in terms of on the court, you know, production over his seven seasons. So hired in March of 2017, finishes last season with a record of 12-20, 4-14 in conference, was responsible for actually two 12-20 seasons. His overall record finished at 119-109, barely above 500, one NCAA tournament win under his belt, four NIT tournament wins under his belt. Ultimately, Joel, I think this is where the rubber meets the road, in that Oklahoma State never finished above fifth in the Big 12, and their two 8-10 finishes were their best in, and they were in back-to-back years. And so, you know, if you look at that, it's tough to find much on the court success throughout the Mike Boynton tenure. I think the highlight is obviously the Cade Cunningham year, but you can almost throw that one away because that's a generational talent walking through. Stillwater, you don't get a ton of those. And, you know, ultimately, Joel, the program just found itself in a stagnant place.
And it was stagnant, much like most of the offense that we watched for the entirety of the Boynton era. Like, I always kept waiting for that next gear to hit, or the, okay, he's got a couple years under his belt. He's been a, you know, P5 coach for long enough. Like, got to figure it out. You would think you would see more, and we just didn't. A lot of the situational coaching was poor the first year and was poor the seventh year. I mean, it's just the reality of what he was. Nothing really changed. Like, I was hoping that this year might be, you know, with this being his, what, a make or break type of year, that we'd see some sort of either philosophical change or scheme change, whatever it is. And I watched that first game against Abilene Christian. I turned it on. I watched about 5 minutes and I went, oh, it's the same. It's the same thing. And the defense wasn't as good. And so I was like, oh no, this is going to be a problem. And it was the same. It was a problem all year. And it's the same problems that have plagued his teams the entire time. Great athletes can run around on defense. They're going to fly up and down the court and they're not going to hit shots. And they're going to get open shots, but none of them are going to make them. And the lack of development from a lot of guys, especially guys that were in the program for a long time, that were his guys, it just wasn't there. And this is where we sit because of that.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, one of the questions I wanted to ask you is why right now? Why March 14th? And, you know, there's been a lot of speculation around the buyout. You know, Oklahoma State didn't want to wait until April 1st, when outlining his contract is a, you know, I think it reduces from 80 to 60%. So basically taking your buyout from 8.1 million to 6.67 million. One caveat I'll throw into that: we don't know what ultimately shakes out. Everybody looks at a contract and says, this is what has to happen. There are lawyers, there are agents, there are negotiations that happen. And ultimately, Joel, I don't know what had to take place to make that possible, but there was a lot of, you know, speculation and frankly, a lot of misguided or misinformed folks who talked about the state of the program's financials. And the narrative overarching was that Oklahoma State can't afford to make a move like this, and they're just stuck in basketball purgatory. And so for me, the move is kind of impressive. I think for Chad Weiberg to, you know, there's been some chatter about him. Does he have the stomach to make a move like that? And ultimately he did. And frankly, I think it was a hard decision. I don't think that it was easy by any means. I think that even a diehard fan would tell you, yeah, I mean, the financials look to be a problem, but, you know, all of that shakes out after the fact, and there's stuff that we may never end up knowing. So my question to you is, why do you think they did it right now?
For the same reason that you're seeing college football coaches get fired earlier and earlier. You're trying to get ahead of the carousel, and you're trying to get your name in there before other schools start making moves and start poaching your guys that you want to get. I think that's where this ultimately comes down to, and why $2 million extra dollars were paid to Mike Boynton, because they didn't want to wait until Final Four weekend to make this move, when guys that we're going to talk about could be off the market by that point. Then you're either going to the scrap heap of maybe a retread that you don't want to have to hire, but you're going to because he's available, or you're going to the lack of proven success, or a Mike Boynton type situation where it's hiring from within with an assistant, or an assistant that's never been a head coach. So this gives Oklahoma State the opportunity in the runway to try and get a more proven commodity than what they had when they hired Mike Boynton in 2017.
Yeah, I think you said it perfectly, and I want to come back to your comment about, you know, a proven commodity here in just a moment, but I would totally agree with you, and it's another reason I think that Chad Weiberg handled this very well. You know, we've talked a lot on this podcast before about, you know, was some of Mike Holder's decision making in terms of contract, was that good or bad? And ultimately, I think in Chad Weiberg's first chance to show a massive personnel decision, I think he did two things well. One, I think he was decisive. And I think he also was considerate of the environment around him. Oklahoma State, I feel like in the past, might have waited, might have like dilly-dallied and tried to figure out the more conservative way to do this, when ultimately what they were able to figure out is, okay, we need to make an aggressive move and do exactly what you just said and get ahead of the coaching carousel, because there are some good names out there, and there are some good names with low buyouts. Like, if you look around the landscape, yep, there are some names that Oklahoma State can go get for not that much. And so they bite the bullet on the front end to, you know, maybe go get a good name that doesn't cost you very much on the back end. And so for that reason, I think you got to give a ton of credit to Chad Weiberg for A, making the somewhat aggressive move, and B, doing it in a very environmentally cognizant mode. So I thought he did a great job here.
Credit where it's due. I did not think it would come to this. I never thought that they would make the decision to rip the Band-Aid off like this. I was preparing for an April 1st or April 2nd, let the buyout come down, which allows you more money to go and get your next head coach. But who's left to go and make that, you know, to make that type of decision? So it was a game of chess that they had to play. And eventually they just decided, we're going to rip the Band-Aid off now. We're going to eat this. And it may stink in the short term, but long term, maybe we're able to get a better coach that's able to stick around and get us back into March Madness, which they've only done one time. Yeah. And it's so fascinating. I'm going to circle back to Boynton for just a second. It is fascinating how fine a line of success in college sports is, where there were 2 years besides the Cade Cunningham year where Oklahoma State was like left out of the tournament for basically no reason other than Oklahoma had Trae Young in his first year. If he makes the tournament that year, we're probably not having this conversation. And last year, you're the first team out, literally the 69th team in the NCAA tournament. It's just funny how it all works out like that.
I would also say that there are so many games that I can think of throughout the era where you've got some momentum. Finally, you've maybe gone on the road and won a big one at Texas Tech, or you're stringing together some wins, and you come home and you've got a TCU on your home floor, or you've got a bad OU team on your home floor, and you lose that game. I mean, how many times did that happen in the Boynton era? Where
all the time
the big game wasn't the opponent on the floor. It was like the situation. It was like, oh man, if you just win this game. And so to your point, if you win that game, you're in the tournament 2 years. And there's a third one as well, where they were kind of just on the outside looking in. And so I could not agree with you more. I would even say I was at the Bedlam game this year. If Javion McCollum, if that shot rims out, I have a feeling we're not having this conversation. Dustin and I said five wins was probably enough to justify, even from me, like from a diehard OSU basketball fan, was probably enough to justify, yeah, you could see a reason why you would want to run that back with the young talent on the floor, especially if they were getting better late. That shot doesn't go in. Comments in the media from Mike Boynton say, you know, I was surprised at how much that affected us. Then you lose to UCF at home. Then you go get, I think, your doors blown off by Texas Tech right after that. And
in front of an empty Gallagher Iba.
Yeah, just a deflating loss. And so your point is very well taken. That line is very thin. And it was always thin throughout the Boynton era. It was just never just enough.
Yeah, that ultimately is what it boils down to. We're not having this conversation if he's made three tournaments in 7 years.
Yeah.
Like at all.
I think you're spot on. I wanted to go back to a comment you made about a proven commodity. And when we talked about, you know, why Chad Weiberg did it right now, why you bite the $8 million bullet and make a move right now. I mean, there's an elephant in the room, I guess, anytime Oklahoma State opens up this job, and it's Doug Gottlieb. And so what I wanted to talk to you about was, you know, if you get on Twitter today, or if you listen to local, you know, sports talk radio, there is an overwhelming, you know, desire to make that move. And I'm not even going to sit here and say it's like, okay, I will say it's a bad move, but I'm not going to disparage the folks that believe that. But if I look at the situation, biting that $8 million bullet to turn around and make that move is a mistake. You shouldn't have fired Mike Boynton if that was what you were going to do. What are your thoughts on it? I mean, where do you stand on that whole conversation?
It would be wholly unserious to fire Mike Boynton and then turn around and hire Doug Gottlieb. It would be completely unserious. I was in the camp of hire him after Underwood left. Because of the way that that went down, I was fine with, okay, I know that he hasn't coached at the collegiate level, but you're bringing home one of our guys, which is something that Oklahoma State kind of puts a premium on, not just in basketball, but other sports. And he gets an opportunity. I was cool with that. They hire Boynton. That's all right. Doug Gottlieb has still not coached collegiate basketball during that time. He has consulted this year, and sure, that's great. He has not sat on a bench in a college, for any college program in the past 6-7 years. If he was really that serious about wanting a college job, then he should have gone and done that. And so at this point, I do not think you can turn around and do that. If you do that, sure, you may make a faction of the fan base happy because you bring home one of our guys. But when we're sitting around having this conversation next year, when they're 12-20 again, what good is it at this point?
Yeah. And one of the common, arguments there is like, you know, think about the recruiting. Oklahoma State hasn't had a problem there.
No,
like, that's not why you're in the situation you are. And I would also, I'd ask you this question, like in today's day and age, how important is recruiting at the high school level, or even recruiting out of the portal obviously is important, but I'm thinking of it from one step above that. And it's the financials to be able to go do that at a high level.
Yes.
So it's not like the guy, I don't think you're trying to put the right guy there to be able to go into any room and convince somebody to come play at Oklahoma State. I think that was Mike Boynton. Like, I think that that's what you had.
And that's what you had in Travis Ford too.
That's right. Like, so that's
why his ass off couldn't do it on the floor.
That's why I think you go get somebody that's a proven winner at the Division I level. That's what I'll say. At the Division I level, that has won a lot of games, and there are a lot of coaches out there that have done that. And I think the recruiting in this day and age takes care of itself if you just start winning, because that donor base that shrinks and shrinks and shrinks when you're really struggling, all of a sudden when you start winning and the seats are full and you're selling concessions and I'm buying, you know, Michelob Ultras at every game in Gallagher Iver Arena, it's a good deal. And that only happens if you start winning. And we've experienced that over the last 7 years. And so that's kind of the way I see it. I don't think in this day and age, a bona fide recruiter as your leading attribute is the type of hire you need to go make.
No, because we just saw what that was. We had, three top 25 classes, including a top 5 class. What did that get us? It got us an awesome year of Cade Cunningham.
Yep.
And that's it.
Yep.
And a lot of the guys that Boynton has brought in, sans this year, because guys are still here, at least for now, either a bunch of guys are like, he was good as a freshman.
Yeah.
And as a junior, he's the same guy.
Yeah.
Or they go to another program and they're not good at all.
Yeah.
Or they're not doing anything. So you can go and recruit all you want. I want dudes to knock down shots, and I don't care where they come from.
Yeah. So as I look ahead, you know, one of the, I think, first questions people ask is, how do you retain the talent on the roster? And so I look at a couple of things, in that conversation. I think Oklahoma State's probably going to make a move fast. I think I actually read this. Chad Weiberg is part of the selection committee, and therefore he's going to have kind of a front row seat to all of this.
Yeah.
The way it shakes out. And so, number one, very interesting there. But number two, Oklahoma State has a window of opportunity here to make a move and get in front of a transfer portal window that opens up on Monday. So I think you have a situation, Joel, where A, you can't go hire somebody that is currently coaching. I do think you can get a, you know, a wink, wink, nudge, nudge, like not yes, but yes type of situation. I think you can secure something like that. Whether you can do it within 5 days, is that smart? I don't know. But I think Oklahoma State is going to try to move fast. And I think that for that reason. But additionally, you need the coach to come in here and look at the talent that you currently have and figure out what to do with it. There's been a lot of discussion around how do you keep XYZ, Garrison, Small, Daly, et cetera. And I don't think the question is how. I think the question is, do you keep those guys, or do you allow the next coach in Oklahoma State basketball to come in and make that decision? These are the, you know, million-dollar questions that you and I don't get paid enough to answer.
Yeah, it gets tricky. I think there's talent on the roster. I think that's undeniable. But it's a matter of, can the next coach get the most out of them to where they actually meet the potential that they came in with? Yep. And that's where you got to maximize the roster with what you have. And next year is going to look very different. I think there are going to be a couple guys to stick around. I think we're going to see all of these dudes leave, but I wouldn't be shocked if one of Daly, Garrison, Keller is gone. Because you know that someone's going to throw a bag at them. Javon Small, you know, I hope that they find a way to keep him because I thought he was one of the few bright spots. But again, money talks. And what's another team going to throw for a veteran point guard that, you know, can maybe be the final piece of a tournament team?
Yeah, I completely agree. One thing that is interesting to note is this upcoming season is the first time in 3 years that Oklahoma State's going to have every scholarship at its disposal. They're going to go
from
12
to
13. So you already have an opening there. So I'm fascinated to see what they do, what this next head coach does, what the process looks like. I do think you're probably going to see some announcements, whether it's when the portal opens up or even before. Nowadays, you're seeing guys say, I plan to enter the portal. I wouldn't be surprised if you saw one or multiple of those announcements over the next couple of days. It's a competitive landscape. And Joel, I do think that that moves us kind of right into the topic of like who's on your list, because what I'm looking at first and foremost is, can you go get a guy that's going to bring a guy? And there is a guy on our list that has that quality. We won't get to him first, but Joel, why don't you kind of walk through, you know, your guys that you have circled?
So you can stop me at any time. I'll just give my top five and we can go from there. Cause I know we have a couple that are similar. So top guy on my list is Josh Schertz from Indiana State. And it goes with your point of, can you bring people? I would do whatever I could to make Robbie Avila come with him. Cause holy crap, I would love having that guy. Rec specs and all, but he's awesome. But also, all five of his starters at Indiana State that are going to go to the NCAA tournament are they're all underclassmen. So they can come back. Or so there's no like senior guy that's going to transfer, or they have COVID eligibility, whatever it is. So that's where you could bring in a couple of his guys to kind of set the culture, kind of get things figured out, and then recruit from there. Darian DeVries from Drake, another name that I know has been thrown around quite a bit. Mark Bennington from James Madison, success at Georgia Southern prior, 31-3 this year at James Madison, going to the NCAA tournament. Bryce Drew from Grand Canyon, you're going to get kind of the Scott Drew tree. I'm fine with bringing in a Drew to coach my team. I know things didn't go well at Vanderbilt for him, but winning at Vanderbilt's a disaster in any sport except baseball. So, you know, take that for what you will. And the last name that I know you're going to want to talk about is Ben McCollum. If you don't know who that is, he is the head coach at Northwest Missouri State. Been there since 2009, has not had a losing season since 2010. Three Division II national championships. Has won the MIAA conference in D2. Looks like a bunch of times. Has won it every year since 2013.
Wow.
And in his career, he's been the coach there since 2009-10. Career record of 365-86. That's good for an 81% win percentage. The other part that is interesting about McCollum when it comes to the money side of things, he's only making $195,000 this year. And according to Wyatt Wheeler, who is a journalist for the, I want to make sure I get this right, the Springfield News Leader, there's no buyout on his contract. So again, if you want to save a little bit, that could be a place to do it. But an 80% winning percentage, even in D2, that is nuts. Yeah. I know that the D2 to P5 jump is pretty significant, but again, if you can win, you obviously have the goods.
I'm going to hold my comments on your list because I'm going to present mine. And what I'd like to do is we can like go back and, you know, ask each other questions about ours and go from there. But we only have two names in common, and that's Josh Schertz and Darian DeVries. I'll get to kind of my rankings. And I'm going to go from like bottom up. I've got Danny Sprinkle, Utah State, really going to be a popular name in this coaching cycle. It's already maybe one of the most popular names for Oklahoma State. Like if you look around, that's who people are talking about. Mountain West Coach of the Year, was at Montana State previously. He's in his late 40s. So he's got some experience. That's one that I have on my list mainly because I think you have to. He's going to be a hot commodity. Number four, this is a guy that I could see Oklahoma State, you know, making a run at. Amir Abdur-Rahim. Are you familiar with him, Joel?
Yeah, South Florida, right?
Yeah, so he was at Kennesaw State last year and took them to their first ever NCAA tournament. 26-9 record, and I think they lost in their first round. But regardless, has now transitioned into the head coaching job at South Florida. And it has led them to a record of 23-6 and 16-2 in the American, and is the unanimous American Conference Coach of the Year. One thing I think is very interesting about him is younger guy, very solid recruiter, and plays a brand of basketball that I think Oklahoma State fans would jive with. I think that he would be a guy that Oklahoma State would take a long, hard look at. Number three, Josh Schertz. For every reason you listed, Indiana State is not an easy place to win. Historically, you know, one of the toughest places to win, and he's doing it there. I think Oklahoma State's going to have some stiff competition with him. Mm-hmm. I think he's already being looked at for several openings around the country, but I Louisville is one of them. So Oklahoma State's going to have to figure out, you know, how deep in the pocketbook do they want to go? Darian DeVries, I have a hard time putting him at number two because my number one is a pipe dream in a way. And I think Darian DeVries is probably, you know, the guy that would come in and give you a Brad Underwood-esque turnaround. If you don't know him, he's at Drake. They're absolutely killing it. They're going to be in the NCAA tournament. You know, lots of success at a place in Drake that has not had very much success. He's kind of the artist of their turnaround. He's going to be a hot commodity as well. But the thing that I like about him maybe the most is he'd probably bring his son with him, Tucker. And Tucker is the fifth leading scorer in Division I basketball. He's averaging 22 points a game. He's a 6'7 wing and shoots the lights out. I mean, multiple games in the high 30s. This is a guy that like wouldn't cost you any NIL dollars. You could just sweeten the pot with his dad and figure out how they figure it out on the back end. And then you could potentially use some around the periphery of your roster to upgrade talent. But that is one that is extremely exciting because anytime you can go get a father-son type situation like that, Greg McDermott, Dougie McBucket style, that would be a great opportunity for Oklahoma State. But I've been excited to talk about, you know, my leading candidate for Oklahoma State. And this one is one that like I think has a less than 5% chance of happening. But if it happened, it would be a home run slam dunk hire. That's Will Wade. Yeah, I think the turnaround at McNeese State is one, it's unprecedented. They went from 11 wins to 30 in 1 year. He's recruited a guy in Shahade Wells from TCU to McNeese State. Shahadeh Wells was a high-level Division One, you know, Power Five player, and now he's at McNeese State and just killing it. They're gonna win. They are going to be the artist of an upset in March. I'm just telling you right now, they are going to win a game. And I think Will Wade, I looked at his buyout last night. His buyout is a maximum of $1.5 million. Have to think that if Oklahoma State's going to be looking for a guy like that, they will be comfortable with a number like that. I think where you're going to find some dangers if you're trying to buy out a Greg McDermott or somebody like that, I think a Will Wade is an option. Now, obviously, Joel, that comes with a different conversation.
Let me
back up if people don't know. Will Wade was caught up in the exact same FBI wiretap investigation that Oklahoma State was caught up in. And I think for that reason alone, like if it was a separate recruiting violation, I wouldn't think anybody bats an eye. It's like, well, now all that's legal in NIL.
That's the thing. Like we know he can recruit with NIL because he was doing it before NIL existed.
That's my point. I just wonder if the optics are too strong to overcome here, because if not, he's the guy.
Yes. And to me, it's not the optics of Will Wade right now. It is the optics when you juxtapose Mike Boynton and Will Wade, like the people. Right. Like it would feel weird when you think about how awesome of a dude Mike Boynton was to then go and turn around and hire Will Wade, kind of a snake. Like you kind of have that. It's just a weird thing for me to like, I can't square the circle on that, but I totally understand it. I was talking to Philip about this earlier. I just want to win, man. You want to win ball games? You hire Will Wade.
Like that's where I'm
you're going to win games. And if that's all Oklahoma State fans care about, they don't give a damn about anything else. They just want winning basketball. Yeah, you hire that guy. Like, sign, seal, delivered, you do it.
I kind of wonder if that's where we're at, though. Like, I was going to ask you this. Like, let's say they hire Will Wade and they finish the non-conference 11-1, 12-1, and ranked in the top 25. You think anybody cares about that? Like, I personally don't.
Winning takes care of everything. It does. It just does. Now, here's the concern with Will Wade that I think maybe the other people that we talked about on our list wouldn't be the concern. Would he bounce for a better job after 1 year?
Yeah.
Like he takes Oklahoma State to 25-6 and a Sweet 16 and then turns around and goes and gets an awesome job somewhere else. Like if Calipari left or whatever it is. Like I could see that being the scenario that maybe scares off Oklahoma State. I don't think they want a Brad Underwood type 1 year, and then we're having to have this conversation all over again.
Yeah, I'll say this, you know, about that. Like, I totally agree. I think if you can go hire a high character, high output, you know, type of guy, I think that's probably not going to be Will Wade. Like, there's just a lot that follows him. But I do think, like, I think that the bouncing after 1 year is a risk you have to be willing to take. Like, it's scared money don't make none. And the other option is, you know, you go hire I would agree. The other guys on our list, you know, probably don't do that. I think the other guys on our list remind me of like a Grant McCaslin type hire that Texas Tech just made, a guy you could see build a program and be there for a decade. Like, I think that Darian DeVry, Josh Schertz could do that at Oklahoma State. I just think that Will Wade would be the quickest path to winning basketball. And if I'm an Oklahoma State fan, I'm getting pretty pumped up for a hire like that. I don't think it's going to happen. I think that it is as likely to happen as my off the wall coach candidate that I wanted to ask you about. What's Chris Beard doing?
Oh, man. See, that's just as like, but I think he's such a snake oil salesman that I couldn't stomach it. It would, you'd win, but, I couldn't do it.
Do you have a guy that like you've thought about and you're like, no way that happens, but what if?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think I ever got beyond that but then again, like how often does Oklahoma State do the thing that everyone thinks they're going to do?
Apparently never. Like they
never,
because everybody thought that this wasn't going to happen.
Right.
There's another guy. I was texting with my brother about him last night, but Kim English at Providence.
Okay, that was a name I did think about, but I think he's going to wait it out another year, let Dennis Gates get, you know, kicked down the road at Missouri and then head there.
I got to think that that's his end goal,
I think that's the path, but the
The reason I was thinking could be worth a conversation, it's his old conference. He knows this area. He's played in this area, probably has recruiting connections still in this area, but I think you're probably right. Mizzou, boy, that's in shambles.
It was a rough year being an Oklahoma State fan up here because K-State, KU were at least, you know, pretty good, you know, decent to pretty good. I could always at least say it could always be worse because Mizzou went 0-18 in the SEC and lost to some bad basketball teams too in non-con.
Agreed. So I want to ask you a couple of questions about your list because there are some candidates on here that are interesting, but I want some context around. So I'll start with Bryce Drew. Guy that has won at a lower level, right?
Yeah.
And had an 0-18 season at Vanderbilt. Does that give you any pause?
No, because winning at Vanderbilt's damn near impossible.
Yeah. Ask Jerry Stackhouse.
Yeah. Like, unless you are their baseball team, which is their pride and joy, it's impossible to win anything else at Vanderbilt, I think. Like, look at their football team.
Yeah.
With all that SEC money, and if they win four games, it's a good year. Like, I think basketball is very similar there. I can't remember the last time Vanderbilt was any good.
Yeah.
So I think it's just a school thing and not a.
They've made a couple of runs to the NCAA tournament, but they have never kind of advanced through it. So I get what you mean. I mean, I think that the Drew family connection there is very interesting.
And he's been awesome at Grand Canyon, like completely made them. Yeah. 27-4 this year. They're going to be another team kind of like McNeese. That's going to beat somebody in the first round. Cause they kind of have that same thing where I tie on Grant Foster, who played at KU for a couple of years. He's been awesome for them. And when you have that guy that was like at a high D1 school, goes down to a mid-major, they just find a way to beat a team. That's one of the things I look for is, okay, what high P5 transfers are at this mid-major. And if they have a couple or one that's pretty good, then I'm going to pick them to win.
Yeah, so if I look at his record at Grand Canyon, 2020, 17-7, 23-8, 24-12, 27-4. So he has improved every year since he's been there. This is going to be their third NCAA tournament berth in 4 years, and record of 17-3 in conference this year. So I like it. I think the Vanderbilt years scare me off a little bit, but I don't hate it. I think that that would be a conversation that they're willing to have. And I want to get to your guy in Ben McCollum, because this is really interesting. Like, this is kind of like taking a flyer on Chris Klieman, and that's worked out perfectly for Kansas State. But it is basketball, and are you doing enough with the, you know, intangibles of coaching at the Power Five level? Like, are you making too big of a leap too fast with a guy like that?
I don't think so. Like, if he had only been there for 5 years, I think I would have a lot more pause. But he has had a ridiculous run of success for well over a decade there. So I think that's why I'm not as concerned about that, because it's been, and it's not like it's, he's had some good years, but it's been national championship, national championship, national championship. Like, he's won four of them, gotten to the Sweet 16. I think they're only 1 year during this run over the last decade that they haven't made it to at least the Sweet 16 or the second round. Wow. So, and all of those years, only two tied for first, only regular season co-champs, only two times, outright winner, 8 out of 10. So, I mean, just winning, and including 1 year, they go 38-0. The 31-1, got a 28-2, and they're 31-3. They're just winning, man. Like, I have a hard time believing that this can't, like, it can't work in some capacity. It may be a slower build just because of the jump, but I have no reason to believe that it can't work by year two.
Yeah, I like it. It makes me nervous. It feels like a big jump. But I do think that pedigree matters, and you'd be bringing a winning coach in. I think the jump is large. So this leads me to my final question on, you know, the coaching.
Oh, by the way,
carousel.
They're 27-4 this year too.
Yeah. I mean, they're,
which
they're
was not
solid.
Included on Wikipedia.
Northwest Missouri State's got a great athletic department. They're
and
always
they
good in football. They're always good in basketball.
They've lost one time in the calendar year of 2024.
I'm pretty sure they're really good in like soccer too. So
yes. And football. Yeah. They're just a good athletics program.
Yeah. Okay, so let me ask you this. I'm going to ask, who do you think is the hire and who do you want it to be? And you should answer those in the reverse order of how I asked them.
Okay.
So who do you want it to be and who do you think it is?
So I think I want it to be, after talking about it, I think Darian DeVries, I think, is the guy that I want. I would still like Ben McCollum, but I think it's just a kind of an under-the-radar thing. Who I think Oklahoma State hires, I have no damn idea because no one knows what Oklahoma State's going to do.
Well, I think you and I are actually going to be in agreement here. I will say, though, I think the guy that I think they're going to hire is the guy that I want. I mean, I said this. I had a hard time putting Darian DeVries at number two because I think that he's the most logical candidate. He knows Midwest basketball. He plays the pack the line defense. He runs a really exciting brand of offensive basketball. I think it's a perfect fit for Oklahoma State. Brings his son in. You have an immediate asset on your hands. And I think that he is the quickest conceivable path to getting Oklahoma State back to competing for an NCAA tournament spot. And if he brings a son, you could be there as quickly as next year. Like a backcourt of Javon Small and his son is, you know, top level in the Big 12. That's how good that would be.
As a team, shooting 37% from three this year. I just found that. Like, that'll play.
It's better. It's certainly better. It's not Josh Schertz. I think, what do they shoot? They shoot maybe like at the top of the food chain.
Somewhere in that realm, yeah. Because I'm looking, again, and then you go back to 2022, 2023, 37%. They were 34% the year before, but like 34% in college is not bad. Like, that's fine. I just think it would work. And you have and he comes from the tree with Dana Altman at Oregon, Greg McDermott. Like, there's some good, you know, pedigree there from his time as an assistant. He was an assistant at Creighton for 17 years. I didn't realize it was that long. That's crazy.
Yeah. I'm going to throw a couple of other names at you just real quickly before we wrap up the coaching carousel conversation. We didn't talk about Dusty May at all. Do you think Oklahoma State has a shot there?
No, I think the buyout would be too great. I think that's the problem. It was like he just signed a massive extension after getting to the Final Four last year. And I just don't think you could conceivably pay him the money to get him away from that and be able to pay the buyout at the same time. I think that becomes the tricky part. Let me look up that buyout number, but I'm pretty sure
I'm looking at it.
It's not like it's crazy punitive, but it's...
His contract itself is big. The buyout looks like it's $1.25 million per year starting immediately as of last year and increasing by 5% each year until 2033. So you're talking about a Will Wade level buyout. What I think
That's not as bad then.
No, what I think is the problem here is that you're going to be competing with like Louisville, Ohio State, you're going to be Washington, you're going to be competing with some programs that have deep pockets. I think Oklahoma State can compete in that arena. And I think Dusty May would be like maybe your 1A. And then everybody else we just mentioned is your 1B through F.
And in a perfect world, he's number one with the bullet. But yeah. I don't think that I don't think that's going to happen.
Another off the wall candidate, probably more realistic than a Chris Beard, is a guy that is potentially disgruntled with his university administration. His season potentially just wrapped up last night in the Big 12 tournament. Can I interest you in Jerome Tang?
I think so. I'm just worried.
I think
I'm just worried.
Phone call.
He might, but I'm worried that he caught lightning in a bottle with Marquise Noel and Keontae Johnson.
Possibly.
He's just like an okay coach.
I don't know. I thought that they had a better year than people give them credit for. Like they were, maybe. They had a down year, and their down year is like right on the bubble. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I kind of wondered if it was like, if there was going to be some sort of regression.
Yeah.
And I guess if you want to kind of point one thing, they had a massive turnover problem on offense. And what was the thing that has plagued Oklahoma State for the entirety of the Boynton era? It was that. Playing that frenetic pace offense. It leads to more turnovers. And I'm not saying you need to run a set play offense and, you know, go back to 1965, but there's got to be some sort of middle ground there. And like I saw, I think it was the Cincinnati game. He had like 23 turnovers and I was shocked. And one of my buddies, it's a K-State fan. I hadn't watched much of them this year was, oh yeah, that's like normal for us. Yeah. That would concern me. Now, can he recruit? Yes. Are you getting that Scott Drew kind of that coaching tree? Yes. So, you know, he's probably going to be able to recruit, develop. That's fine. I just, after seeing the kind of them come back down to earth a little more this year, I have a little bit of pause.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with that. All right, Joel. Well,
we're not going to wait. You're not going to mention Bill Self or Travis Ford.
I was actively steering away from the Bill Self conversation. However, I can't believe the level of vitriol towards Bill Self in one down year that I've seen from that fan base.
Every year. Every year is the worst Bill Self team of all time, except this year might actually be.
Well, I'll tell you this. Oklahoma State fans are very rational. And so, therefore, if he wants to experience that, he could just come here. Don't you think?
Yeah, he's got too sweet a gig. It's a lifetime contract where he can stick his feet up. Because they actually would find a way to like retroactively punish Bill Self now that he goes to Oklahoma State, because KU did the smart thing and kicked their feet up, gave the NCAA the double birds and said, come get us. And they didn't really do anything. So,
yeah, Bill Self would literally just have to say, I've made enough money. Like, I'm good. I want to go coach my alma mater.
It's too sweet a gig. He's not leaving.
Could he have had a, you know, midlife crisis after some of his health stuff and say, I'm not going to coach my alma mater? Is this the time? Something to think about. Joel, I don't think that's going to happen. Before we get into listener questions, and obviously the listener questions are predominantly surrounding the Mike Boynton situation, what's Oklahoma State going to do next? We would be remiss to not talk about Oklahoma State going into Norman and laying the smackdown in baseball last week, a win 14-5 over the Sooners. Tyler Wolfert, probably your MVP in that game with four RBIs. But Joel, what are your thoughts? That was pretty fun, dropping a seven spot in the first inning.
Well, especially considering the midweek rotation is a massive question mark for this team, you know, because they lost to a 1-11 Utah Tech team the week before. I was like, oh boy. I didn't know what to expect, but they pieced it together. And Josh Holliday, no matter how good or bad Oklahoma State is, he finds a way to beat OU. He just does. That is what his calling card has been as the coach at Oklahoma State. He just beats the team down south. Shout out Tommy Molsky, 8 strikeouts and 2 2/3. I think he struck out the first 6 batters he faced, which pretty good, one might say. And this is without Nolan Schubart right now, who's probably the best prospect this team has. So you're getting massive contributions from Colin Ritchie and Avery Ortiz, who are kind of, you know, they were inserted in the lineup predominantly because of Schubart's absence. 4-for-5 with a home run for Ritchie, 2-for-3 for Avery Ortiz. Those are freshmen that just hit. I have no belief that this team isn't going to bang. Like, they're going to hit the ball. It's just a matter of piecing the rotation and the lineup or in the you know, the bullpen together. That's going to be the biggest hangup for this team right now. But man, they found a way to hit and they got on OU early, and you could tell it just kind of deflated them.
Yeah. I pulled up the play by play and you're correct. Molsky did strike out 6 in a row, which is pretty salty. I think Oklahoma State's going to be all right. Like, I think that their midweek may just kind of be this ebb and flow. I would say hammering OU in Norman is probably more resembling of who you are as a team than losing to Utah Tech. So correct. I slant towards they're probably going to be that towards that good rather than that bad. But it's definitely something to keep an eye on as we go forward.
Yeah, a lot of fun. It's always fun to, when you can beat them. And once they get the offense back to full strength and are able to get Schubert back in there, I'm going to feel a lot better. Because they always find a way to get to shore up the rotation in the bullpen by conference play. They kind of use a lot, and it's not like they don't care about non-con, but it's a lot of, okay, I'm going to put this guy in this situation and see if he can handle it. And if he can't, well, you're probably not going to see that guy pitch in conference play. And they find a way to just get it to the 5 to 6 guys they trust, and they're just going to let it ride and see how far it can take them.
Yeah, I love it. Interesting weekend series coming up in Orlando against Central Florida. Hopefully the athletic department can turn the tide against UCF.
No kidding, man.
Not having a good time against the Golden Knights so far.
They're not on the 2024 football schedule, right?
They're not.
Thank God.
Yeah, apparently pretty good. So we need to get them off the schedule with pretty much everything else too. So, Joel, before we move into listener questions, which I want you to stick around for, let's take a quick pause and hear a word from Classic Overland. We want to say a quick thank you to sponsor the Feels Like 45 podcast, Classic Overland. Classic Overland specializes in restoring original Land Rover Defenders designed with your unique style and specifications. They go to great lengths to find quality vintage Defenders before they begin the restoration process, and their team of experts will guide you through the various exterior and interior options to create the perfect build. Our friends Luke Reed and Robert Dennis of Classic Overland are both Oklahoma State graduates and will work with you through the process to ensure you have a great experience. And in addition, if you purchase a Classic Overland Defender and mention this podcast, the Feels Like 45 podcast, their team will donate a portion of the proceeds to the Pokes With a Purpose NIL Collective. To learn more, you can visit their website, classicoverland.com, and you can contact Luke and Robert at robert@classicoverland.com. Thank you, and go Pokes! All right, Joel, welcome back. Thanks again for joining me on this podcast. You've made it much more enjoyable than talking to myself in my office. But let's go ahead and hit a few listener questions. We got a ton. I said that I would try to answer them all, but that's before I knew Joel was going to join me. Let's hear one from Tyler Wheat at Tyler Wheat 7. Obvious question is who you think is the next basketball coach, but he adds, I'm curious why you think they didn't wait until the first to let Mike go in order to save some money. Is the time that crucial, or do you think there is a target in mind that they want to go after? Now, I'll take a stab at that one first, Joel. I think that they more than likely negotiated that number down to be in effect as the April 1 number. You're so close that I'm wondering if there was some sort of like gentleman's agreement, like, look, we're that close. We've done you a great service. You've served us well. Let's help each other out here and let's get that number down. That's why I ultimately think this happened, because ultimately I don't see another way that they just bite a, you know, $2 million bullet. And then additionally, we've answered who we think is the next basketball coach. You know, anything to add to that question, Joel?
Not necessarily. Like I mentioned earlier, I think it's just an opportunity for Oklahoma State to get out ahead of the carousel a little bit. So I bet they have a list of names. I wouldn't be shocked if they're already starting to make calls and put feelers out, because some of these coaches are still coaching. But we also saw that Brad Underwood was named the coach very, very soon after his NCAA tournament run ended, like the next day.
Yeah.
So yeah. I bet there's conversations already being had behind closed doors.
Yeah. I'll let you take this one. It's a two-parter, but the first part of this is who's going to be on your short list. We've already answered that. So I'll let you answer the second part. This one's from Coach Michael Doty at @Mike_Doty. What would be your all-time starting five at OSU? You want to answer this one together?
My all time? Holy crap, man.
Yeah.
Cade running the point. Marcus Smart.
At your two?
At my two. Give me Randy Rutherford. Big Country, obviously. Man, who's my four?
I think you got to go Joey Graham at the four.
I think Joey Graham was who that was the guy that I was about to get to, I think.
Yeah, this one's tough. And I think it's the only position that I really struggle with is point guard. Because, like, you know, Cade Cunningham was around for 1 year. Marcus Smart was around for two. You got people that would like to say, no, Doug Gottlieb, but I agree. I think Cade Cunningham, he's your starting point guard. And at the two, I think is Tony Allen. Like, I know he played the three, but I'm going positionless. I'm putting him at the two, so that way I can have Randy Rutherford on the wing at the three in the baseline, and then I think our four and five are the same. I'd go Joey Graham, Big Country at the five.
Can you give me a six man?
Yes. Oh, you want me to give you one? Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I thought you were asking for a slot.
No.
Ooh. Well, I didn't have Marcus Smart in my starting lineup, so I'll go Marcus Smart.
I'm actually going to go Keaton Page. Give me just an absolute sniper.
Just
give me
just a absolute burner.
Just an absolute sniper and can run the point as well. Let Kate play off the ball a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it. Here's one from Orange Power. What is the top attribute we should look for in the coaching search? Joel, what do you want to see most out of the next head coach in terms of their attributes?
Legitimate development. That was, I think, the biggest hangup. And I talked about that a little bit ago. Like, there were pretty much everybody, I think, that came into the program as one of Boynton's guys. I'm not talking about anybody that were a part of either Ford or Underwood. Those guys, like Mitchell Solomon, I guess you could make as an example, but he really ascended under Underwood and not necessarily Mike. But everybody either stayed the same or got worse as they progressed through Oklahoma State. Like, I haven't seen anybody really take that leap of like, man, they were good last year. They're even better now. Everything felt stagnant and the same. And even throughout the year, a couple of guys would flash for a few games, but it was never sustained.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't think it's the number one thing that I would look for. To me, I want a guy that has a like demonstrated grip on like fundamentals of defense and the way that transitions into your offense. Because what I think held Oklahoma State back was we had the first part handled. Like Mike Boynton was a defensive guy, right? But I don't think that Oklahoma State always played with the ability to transition that into a successful offensive style, which I think Darian DeVries does. He plays that pack line defense. And I think that his system is more geared towards today's game, but they have a toughness on defense about them that I think has been missing in Stillwater for a while. Like Boynton's early teams were tough, but I'm wondering how much of that was a residual effect of prior coaching, because as time went on, they were less and less physical.
I wonder, I'm almost the opposite, where I'd rather have someone that has a much more fundamental understanding of offense.
Mm.
Because, I mean, defense for the most part in basketball is all about hustle and want. Like, you can only coach that so much besides like your basic scheme and fundamental. I want somebody that can run an offense, because in modern basketball, like, we're seeing what's happening with Virginia right now. Like, they're a disaster on offense.
Yeah, they are.
I want somebody that's going to be able to score. Like, if you can kind of strike that fine line between what Underwood brought that year in his year, where the offense was legit fantastic, and Mike Boynton's defense. Like, I'm not saying that it has to be some magic meld of that, but if you can kind of strike that balance, it's going to be a lot better. Because I don't want to see Oklahoma State win more games 57-55. Like, it's just not sustainable. Because if your defense is off that night, you are screwed. Like, you're not going to win, because you have to score into the 70s a lot of times to win some of these games.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I think that my comment was less so about like defensive minded and more so like the ability to play good defense that results in good offense, because like
that's fair.
That was never the case. It was almost like, because I mean, we even saw like when Oklahoma State's defense wasn't as good, it was at the like expense of a better Oklahoma State offense. Like the offense this year was one of Mike Boynton's best, and it was statistically one of the worst offensive and defensive teams in Oklahoma State basketball history. So even though it was one of his best, they were still terrible on both ends of the floor. And so for me, it's like, can you get a guy that can get stops and transition that into a modern style of basketball on the front of the floor? Again, Grant McCaslin, I almost wish that we were in this cycle last year, because that's like the type of coach Oklahoma State needs to go look for. So great question from Orange Power. I think the only other one would be a proven ability to win at the Division I level. Power Five would be even better. Let's get a couple more and then we'll wrap up. At Mark Bewley one, MB Poke says, assuming we could only retain three guys from the current roster, who do you hope to keep? He gives us three, but I don't want to taint your answer, Joel.
I would say Javon Small, Brandon Garrison, and I think you could flip a coin between Keller and Daly.
Yeah.
For the sake of answering the question, I'll say Daly.
Yeah, I would. That's exactly my answer. I think I would go Small, Garrison, Daly would be the three that I would want to keep. It kind of felt like Eric Daly's light bulb turned on very late in the season.
Yes,
which happens with freshmen. It never really did for Brandon Garrison, but I mean, we saw a guy, David McCormick, struggle as a true freshman for KU, and with, to your point, great development, great coaching, he ends up being the best big man in America. And I think Brandon Garrison has like that type of ceiling. So those would be my three. And if I had to pick one, Brandon Garrison's probably the one that I would just say you need to figure out a way to keep him regardless of who the next coach is, because those guys don't walk through, you know, Gallagher Iba all that often.
No, not at all.
Let's wrap up with one final question. This is an interesting one. From Chris Gibbons at Chris74 Gibbons, how do we get NIL to fundamentally change? The pro leagues do not ask fans to donate to players. The money comes from media tickets, parking, concessions, and with no contracts. Joel, what is your assessment of the NIL landscape and where, you know, a solution could come from?
This might sound mean, and I don't intend for it to sound mean. And I might have said this to you at some point. I don't remember. I know I've said it to Philip, that I wish some of our larger donors weren't so worried about putting their names on buildings and would just donate that money to NIL.
Do we know that that's true? Do we know that?
I don't think so. That's just, again, I said it may sound mean. It is not intended to be that, but I would just rather that it not need to be like a name recognition thing on a building.
I'll pose it this way. If I'm giving $5 million to Oklahoma State, my name better be on a building. That may be an ego thing, but like,
if I'm giving
that level of money, there's only so many courtside tickets you can give me. At some point, you're going to have to put my name on the new practice facility or something like that. I like what you're saying. I'm going to take it, my answer, from a little more global perspective, like on NIL. I think that this question makes a great point. Fans, NIL cannot be fan driven. Like,
no, like it's insane that that's
guy,
what it,
like me, yeah, and you, we're the money we're able to give to NIL doesn't make a drop in the bucket. So it's not us that is the problem. It's in my opinion, it's actually kind of the entire system, the way it's designed. And you're reading these articles about donor fatigue and everybody's wondering, like, where's the return on investment? Joel, I don't know if you listened to the episode that I talked about that on, but I literally said this years ago, that at some point we're going to get to a point where every donor that has given, you know, $1 million to their school is going to look up and say, what exactly did I get in return for this? And how long do I keep this up? You'll have the exceptions, like the Fertitta family in Houston. You will have exceptions to that. But at some point, that well is going to run dry. And I think that it doesn't run dry until revenue sharing is a part of this. So I think the only way that we fix the current state is by allowing the university to directly compensate. I think that that's a better outcome for Oklahoma State, don't you?
Yeah.
With a relatively small, like, high-scale donor base. I think that that's a better option than trying to say, hey, you know, Kate and Joel, we need you to stop contributing to your 401k, your college fund, and everything else, and direct it here.
But I also think that maybe having coaches that are more all in and like understand the realities of it, rather than trying to push back for so long or blame it as an excuse, maybe that helps as well.
Yeah. I mean, I maybe. I don't know.
Maybe, but I don't think it helps, because if you have a coach that is, you know, that is like, well, we don't have enough. Well, or maybe in the football case of, we don't want to use it that way. We want to do it the right way. Well, the right way doesn't win.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
I actually really like what you said there. Like, if, you know, it's said that, you know, my money wasn't enough, well, suddenly my money doesn't matter to you, and therefore my money's gone. So, I totally get that. The NIL thing is, it's maybe my least favorite thing about college sports, but it's also one of my favorite things to talk about, because it's like, I feel like the solution is right there. Like, it's revenue sharing.
And to me, it's so funny, because I think the people that are the loudest about, oh, NIL is ruining the sport, all that translates to me is, I wish that NIL was just under the table and I didn't know how much money was getting thrown around.
Well, I mean, I will say, I think it coming like above the surface has brought like some of the people that were a little bit afraid to be the shady guy in the corner. Like, I think that it has enabled them. And so you've definitely, you know, seen some disparaging or discrepancies, I should say, in terms of who was doing stuff and now is doing way more. So it's there is only one fix. I think it's revenue sharing, because there's no putting this genie back in the bottle.
No, if I ever win the lottery, no one will know, but there will be signs, because Oklahoma State will sign the greatest offensive line recruiting class of all time.
Yeah, and it will be brought to you by the Penfield family, of course. Joel, a pleasure having you, my friend.
This has been fun. This has been a lot of fun.
Overdue. Thank you for humoring me, joining the Feels Like 45 podcast on a very eventful week for Oklahoma State sports. So Joel, thank you. Where can the people follow you?
You can follow me at JT Penfield on Twitter. I talk about Oklahoma State. I talk about the Royals a lot. Can I plug that really quick?
Yeah.
I host a podcast
part of the
Kansas City Royals called One Royal Way, part of Kansas City Sports Network. For any Oklahoma State fans up that are Kansas City fans as well, if you follow at KC Sports Network, KU, K-State, Mizzou, Kansas City Current, Sporting Kansas City, 1,000 Chiefs podcasts. So for all things Kansas City, follow what we do over there. It's pretty cool. We're building kind of fun over there.
It's a really cool brand. I'm pretty fond of it. Been following closely, obviously, with my relationship with you, but I just like what they do. You think the Royals are they in a better spot this year? I think they are.
They will be more competitive than last year. They raised the floor of the team very significantly with their free agent signings. Having Bobby Wood Jr. kind of helps too, but they're not going to be an unmitigated disaster like they were last year. And that's all I'm hoping for, as someone that talks about the team and tries to be as positive as they can.
Amen, brother. All right. Well, if you're not already, you can follow him at JT Penfield. You can follow me at Cade Webb. You can follow us at the Feels Like 45 pod, and throw Dustin a follow. He'll appreciate that when he comes back at Dust Ragu. I'll see you guys back here next week. Go Pokes.